purchasing an electric car and also charging stations for both the town vehicles and for municipal
parking, our scope and our mission to make sure that we're as useful to the town as we possibly can be.
Mm-hmm. Shall we start?
Yeah.
Okay. This is a meeting of the South Kingstown Sustainability Committee. It is Monday, July 15th. It is 6:10-ish. I am Angela Tony, and I am here.
6:08.
I'm looking at the clock behind you. Analog.
Hannah, here.
Chris, here.
Mark Russo, here.
Rob Zernetsky, and our guests.
Stefano Loretto with Good Energy.
Philip Carr from Good Energy.
Jamie Rhodes with Good Energy.
I'm Kai Salo, a policy coordinator at Green Energy Consumers Alliance.
Just to kind of go through the motions, we do not have minutes, so can we table that? Okay. We need a motion to add our guests to the agenda because it wasn't posted on there, so can I have one?
I'll make a motion to add our guests to the agenda.
Excellent. Any discussion, questions, comments, excitement? Yes. All in favor?
Aye.
Great. So I guess we'll just jump right in.
Cool. So, who initiated? Was it Kai who initiated this?
Well, Greg actually started the conversation. Greg Madonna.
I talked to
Greg. Did you introduce yourself?
Yeah. Jamie Rhodes. Good Energy.
Good Energy, guys.
Green Energy.
Got it.
Interesting how that worked out.
Tony's here.
And Tony. But I believe Greg from their office had a first meeting April, I want to say.
My colleague Priscilla Delacruz been working on it, but she is out for the month of July, so I've been stepping in to do some of these black creation things. Cool. Yeah.
All right. So thank you all for your time this evening. Really appreciate it. Speaker went on Phil Carr. Green Energy Consumers Alliance and Good Energy are kind of joined at the hip when it comes to aggregation, because we both provide the two key components of how to run a successful program that has a local renewable energy component. So we have a little presentation that combines everything to do with us and how we can get you thinking about starting your program. Jim, would you be able to give a little bit of context on the law, aggregation law, and how that came to pass, and then we'll kick off with a...
Yes.
We can go on to the first slide, actually, and that will cover some of that.
Okay.
So municipal aggregation, I'm not sure if you are familiar at all, but that's okay, because we'll start from the beginning. So basically, when you go to buy electricity, as a residential energy consumer or as a small business, you have two choices. You can go with the utilities basic service. Here, that's National Grid. It's 11 cents per kilowatt hour right now for energy supply. And everyone gets their electricity delivered by National Grid, but you can choose to buy your electricity itself, the actual electrons that come through the wires, from either National Grid or a competitive supplier. Those are the third-party, non-utility energy suppliers that are often known for running scams, locking people into long, expensive contracts. So we are not that. What we're talking about today is municipal aggregation, and that is bulk buying by a municipality on behalf of the residents and small businesses in that community. We believe in municipal aggregation because bulk buying often leads to cheaper and more stable prices for the people in that community. We believe in buying on behalf of the municipality because that means it's more transparent and it's a public process to bring electricity over to local control, local choice. That's why it's often called community choice aggregation, because communities get to have a say in how their electricity works. This has been true across the country for a long time. Massachusetts has been able to do this for a long time. California, community choice aggregation is huge. That little map shows where currently municipal aggregation is allowed. Rhode Island law was changed back in 2017. Green Energy Consumers Alliance worked really hard with Rep. Deb Ruggiero from Jamestown to change the law. We couldn't really do municipal aggregation in Rhode Island for a long time because there were some barriers. One of the main barriers was that they didn't allow opt-out plans. You had to opt in, which meant that every single person in the town would have had to opt into the plan, and that just kind of made it not worth it for a town to try to knock on every door and get everyone in the town to opt into the plan. But that's different now. It changed in 2017. Now we need to bring this to Rhode Island, help Rhode Islanders take advantage of municipal aggregation.
Yeah.
I don't know if someone wants
perfect.
To
yeah, up. Sure. Okay. Perfect. So yeah. So, aggregation in a nutshell is the bulk purchasing. Forgive me if you know this all already, right? It's the bulk purchasing of all the electric accounts within municipal limits that have not already selected another supplier. Okay. So there's two reasons why this is a good thing. One is you get buying as a group. But also, secondarily, you can buy strategically and differently to National Grid, right? And therein lies the key difference, because we can never have more buying power than the utility. But the utility is forced to buy in a very restricted way, so we can actually navigate from that perspective. Basic attributes: you get the same. Think about it. You get the same buying power as the largest industrial user. There's no early termination fees. You can get longer term price stability. I think one of the main priorities for you all here is you can include more local renewable energy. You also can get increased competition as well. So when you go through the whole process and we actually shop your business to market, we put you out to bid with the largest power suppliers in the country. So to be quite clear, Good Energy is not a supplier, we're a consultant, okay? Green Energy Consumers Alliance are the leading gold standard in the procurement of local renewable energy in the Northeast and possibly in the country, right? So we at Good Energy are the most experienced aggregators in the Northeast and in the country as it relates to. So we're kind of like a mini dream team type thing.
Yeah,
so
I'm probably going to say
Steph, you want?
Yeah, so one of the things people wonder is how does this change? What is this? How is this reflected in my bill and how I operate currently? It really is seamless to the end user. The only thing that changes is that circled area there under supplier services, where right now it would read basic service. That would just get replaced with the competitive supplier that eventually wins the bid. Really no different than if you were to change supplier today, it would show your new supplier's name. So it doesn't affect anything regarding outages or your priority in getting service restored. They don't look at it and say, well, you've changed supplier. The state is indifferent. They don't lose money on these types of programs. They no longer operate the supply of power as to make money. That revenue purely comes from the delivery services, and that doesn't change. So outages, any type of quality of service issues, you still contact National Grid. They still repair your lines and poles the same way they have in the past. So to the end user, it's truly seamless. You still pay one bill, you don't get two different bills.
The same also goes for any low-income discounts that customers are already enrolled in. Those continue to move forward as well. Once the changeover happens.
So the low-income discount, just so everyone knows, is 30% off your entire bill. If you have a cheaper supply option, that means that a low-income discount operated through a municipal aggregation will be cheaper than the low-income discount through the utility.
Does this impact anyone who goes ahead with a renewable energy system with, REF or...
Do you mean like the net metering programs?
Yeah,
like
metering, and then there's a tariff growth, which is a production benefit incentive.
Mm-hmm. So it won't impact that. The difference is if you're actually drawing any additional power from the grid, then you'll be getting at the aggregation rate. So if you actually still need some power, it's going to
The same thing goes for the differential between what you are, because you still have the contract to sell the power that you generate back to the grid.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's still there, and then the purchase power that you have is going to be the lower rate, or would be the rate that you have through the aggregation program. So it has a chance to increase that differential, once again, depending on the market.
Because for that, for the RBG, you just literally get paid for what you produce off your system. You get a bill credit, so it shouldn't impact that at all. It actually probably make your bill credit go further.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And then
all the pieces that come together.
That's a good question.
So a little background about us as a company. We really started way back in the late 90s when deregulation first happened, and our business was primarily focused on commercial and industrial accounts, hotel groups, hospitality, and we weren't really focused on residential at all. And we had several cities that we were doing procurement for in the Midwest in Illinois. And when there was a law passed there that allowed municipal aggregation to take hold, they asked us to take a look at it for them. And that was the city of Peoria. Fast forward now, 7 years later, 8 years later, we have over 150 cities and towns in Illinois. In 2014, there were some market dynamics in Massachusetts that finally allowed us to enter the market. Up until that point, even though they had the law in place and it was deregulated, it was kind of a sleepy market. There wasn't a lot going on with it. And then there were these factors that came into play in 2014. We saw that there may be value for these programs now. Since that time, the only real aggregation that was active was the Cape Light Compact. Now we have 42 active aggregations, another 10 in the works. We're the largest by community and households. Our programs have been extremely successful. We're proud to say that every single one of our, I guess, close to 200 aggregations now has saved money for their communities.
You have just two questions. So just what's the sort of standard savings or ROI? And then I'm just curious about the company's business model. So what's the business model and what's...
Yeah. So there's some slides that talk about savings that are going to give you the numbers you're looking for further on. Our business model is that we collect a 1/10 of a penny, and it's a standard really in the country that you get a 1/10 of a penny per kilowatt hour, which means there's no cost to the community up until the program. There's never any cost to the community. There's nothing out of pocket. And we recover our costs and start to get paid once the program is flowing, once accounts are enrolled. And it puts us on the same page, basically. We both have the same incentives. We want to make sure that once these programs are up and running, that we are maintaining participation. It's not the kind of thing where a contract gets signed and then we're kind of like, all right, see you later. We're off to the next one. We want to make sure we keep participation numbers high because that's how we get compensated. So we'll talk a little bit more about that.
Green Energy Consumers Alliance, you might have known us as People's Power and Light. We've been around in Rhode Island for a while. We just changed our name last year to have the same name as our branch in Massachusetts. And the branch in Massachusetts was founded in 1982 to help its members access cheaper energy through our oil buying program. Since 1982, we've changed a lot. We have completely switched our mission to focus on clean energy. And now we are a mission-driven nonprofit that we're all about transitioning to cleaner energy systems and making our energy systems work better for New England consumers. We have a program to buy green power, and we have done that on an individual consumer level for a long time. That's why, thank you, Philip, for saying that we're the gold standard of procuring local good renewable energy for consumers. We also have an electric vehicle buying program, so it warms my heart to hear that you all have been working on that. I work on Rhode Island policy advocacy, which means that I'm up at the State House or at the Public Utilities Commission working to get better clean energy programs through policy here in Rhode Island. And we work with Good Energy because they have demonstrated that they are also, their programs work really well for the consumer, and they know the value, they recognize the value. So our business model, I guess the reason we do this is because we want to make sure that that people get cheaper electricity and that electricity is coming from real, good, renewable sources.
So it's interesting. It's a little anecdote here. So we went into the market in Massachusetts. So we were all like, hey, we're the experts on aggregation. And then we got this huge demand from prospective clients for renewable energy. And we're like, we're not the experts on local renewable energy. So actually, we pretty much cold called Green Energy Consumers Alliance. And it was an interesting conversation. So we went in there and met with them. And
didn't go well.
and so we started working together, and it was kind of one of those nice sort of symbiotic relationships where there's just like enough differences, enough overlap, but actually we pioneered this model of, we literally sat down and whiteboarded it with the director Larry Creation of how do you have meaningful impact? What's the magic number? So say, you know, the amount that the standard is 10, 11, 12, 13, 40% that you have to purchase. What's a meaningful number that people can afford, right? So we threw numbers around and we felt that initially, just if you just buy 5% more, at that stage in Massachusetts, the renewable portfolio SAM is going up 1% a year. If you just do 5% more, that's like you're 5 years out of the state, right? And it was a pretty simple construct, but it was in a small way revolutionary, because no one had ever done it before. No one had ever folded really local renewable energy. I don't want to jump the gun here because we'll come to the local aspect, more the local aspect later, but it was a unique construct that has now been replicated across Massachusetts. To the extent the city of Boston now is going to do it, they're going to have the 5%, and it is a new way of doing things. So we're kind of proud of the stuff we've accomplished together. Anyway. Yeah.
The reason I was saying it didn't go well is because when we first met with the executive director, Larry, what he knew of aggregations that had done anything with renewable energy were some that we weren't affiliated with us, and they were in Western Massachusetts, and they were touting themselves as 100% local green, but the RECs and the energy was sourced from Texas and the Midwest, and he's like, you guys are like the, you know, greenwashers, and you know, you tout 100% green, and we were like, whoa, we don't, those aren't ours, and we want to understand, because we had a city in Melrose, and we get into it a little bit later, but we can touch on it now, that only wanted to do aggregation if they could include renewable energy from New England. And knowing they were the experts, we went to them and said, whoa, we're trying to figure this out because we have this request, and you guys seem to be the experts with local renewable energy, so let's try and figure this out. And the concept, while sounding simple, is actually very complicated, because a supplier that supplies energy, they buy their own, they have a whole division that deals in renewable energy certificates, and they're getting them through their sources. We're telling them, hey, wait, we want you to carve that piece of the energy out, and we're gonna get those from Green Energy Consumers Alliance. And it took a year and a half to get the lawyers comfortable with it, and also get that mechanism in place. So that was 2014, and well, I think we get into some of the successes. I think we, the, let me see, can I try this?
I'm just trying to figure out where we are. Okay, so we've already talked about that.
Sweet. Yeah, I'm jumping here, sorry. Yeah.
Well, we were just gonna paint a picture here of, these are the residential rates. This is as many as I could squeeze into this page going back to 2011. And these are the rates here in Rhode Island. They change every 6 months. You can see that up until really 2014. And it's no coincidence that that's the same. If you look at the numbers may be different when you look at Massachusetts, but the increase in not only rates, but significant volatility is very similar, because there was a whole bunch of market dynamics that came into play at this time that now create this wild swing that you see in electricity rates from six-month period to six-month period. And part of that is dictated by the way the utilities have to purchase power. As Philip said, our two main advantages about the utility, because people say, how can you beat the utility's rate? You say you have purchasing power. Well, they have a lot more purchasing power. Right. Our main advantage is that they have to go to bid at specific days of the year for a specific amount of time.
We do not. We can go to bid when the market's good for whatever term is most advantageous. And that is our biggest advantage over the utilities. In Massachusetts, you obviously have National Grid as well, and you also have another utility in Eversource that we operate in both. So that's just to highlight kind of the wild swings you've seen over the last few years.
And you guys make the tenth of a penny per kilowatt, no matter what you buy it.
Correct.
So correct.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, Kyra, you want to tell them a little bit about the resource map?
Sure. And this is to underscore the importance of that not all renewable energy is created equal. I feel like in Rhode Island we have a particularly good sense of that because of the very well-publicized controversy over solar siting and where you put our solar projects. And so we understand that not all renewable energy is created equal. Green Energy Consumers definitely takes that quite seriously, and we check our hydro to make sure that it is sustainable hydro plants. The two solar plants that are highlighted on this map are in North Providence and Johnston, and those were built on brownfields and landfills. So we're a great way to know your local renewable energy. We do tours of all of these projects, so our members get to see these projects in person and check that we're actually getting our green power from a good place.
Yeah, and that really ties in with what the city of Melrose initially wanted, right? They opted for 5% from these resources as opposed to 100% from Texas. It was always this message of quality over quantity. And that holds true because even if you go to, you can get what are called, in Massachusetts, they call them MA Class 1 RECs, or they're the RECs that satisfy, in Massachusetts, it's the RPS, here it's the RES. Those actually can come from out of state. They can come from New York, they can come from Canada. There's a lot of biomass, which is just obviously burning stuff. And part of the reason our clients in Massachusetts were drawn to them and were willing to pay a premium in some instances is because of the fact that their RECs from these resources are what we call preferred. They don't include biomass. They're not from New York. There's nothing coming from Canada. So it's this notion of, we always talk about the farm-raised tomatoes here. These are the real organic tomatoes from down the street that you really can't compare the quality to something that's being shipped from across the country. So that's really.
So it's 5%, Hannah wants to sign up. Am I signing up for 5% of my supply, or are you getting 5% of your supply from renewables? I'm missing that. What's that?
So yeah, that's a really great question also. So according to existing Rhode Island state law, we have to get currently, I think, at least 13-ish% of our electricity from renewable resources, and that rises 1.5% per year. Through the municipal aggregation program, that's 18.5% in 2019. That's 20% in 2016. And all of the members of the municipality that chooses to aggregate are automatically opted into that program and receive that renewable electricity content.
But that's our RPS, but under that, you can get from anywhere. Wants. That's so biomass is, that's why we get biomass in our mix.
Yes.
Here.
Yep.
In Illinois and Rhode Island. So you're saying instead of 13%, which could come from Texas or biomass in Maine,
in Rhode Island,
it's 5%.
That 13% is almost entirely from landfill gas from the Johnston landfill, which is burning methane.
Yeah.
But I think there was I want to make sure I didn't miss the confusion. It's like not just the 13% of the standard mix that you currently have, but it would be 5% on top of that. And shifting that 13% away from landfill gas to 18.5% of all local renewable.
All local,
so
not
yes.
Just the additional 5.
Right, it would be the whole package of renewable energy would be the local.
But renewable energy at this higher level that you're talking about. Okay, I get it.
So this kind of touches on what you just mentioned in terms of how does it work. So Where do I start on this? Let me start.
Maybe
should I start?
In the middle.
In the middle.
Normally the way these programs, what we did also pioneer in Massachusetts is these programs used to be that this community would launch a program and everybody's in. There's no options, you're all doing the same thing. And it was kind of left up to elected officials to decide what was going to be the structure of this program. Are we going to have extra renewable energy? If so, how much? Where was it coming from? And so forth. So we came up with this 5% structure. So if you don't do anything, right? So again, these programs are what are called opt-out. So the program launches, everybody gets a letter, there's a whole public awareness campaign that I'm just kind of glossing over. But if you don't do anything, you're going to get enrolled into the default option, which is 5% more renewable energy, right, if you don't do anything. Or you can opt out and you just stay with National Grid's basic service, and then you can do whatever you want. Or you can stay in the program and decide that, you know what, you want to be in the aggregation, but you don't want to pay that 5% premium. You want to just maximize your savings, and maybe you're not a green advocate, so you don't want to pay for that. So you can opt down to a 0%, which would be a real apples-to-apples comparison with the basic service rate. Or you can go up to 100%, which would be obviously at a significant premium. Anybody who's going to 100%, their interest is not to save money. They're willing to pay a couple hundred dollars extra a year so that they can make that contribution to society and so forth. In fact, some communities we also have that have a 50% option. So it's 150, but the bottom line is if you don't do anything, you go into the default, and then once in there, you have different options you can make.
What's the difference in cost of rates between the renewable and competitive?
Good question. What was the delta between like 5% and
between
the basic?
National Grid and the Good Energy, you know. So why would, if you put out a number like $200 a year or more a year, like that?
Yeah, the number we use for that is it's about three. If a rec is $30, right, and then you use 100% of that and you move the decimal point over because it's $30 a megawatt. Right, megawatt hour, and our homes, we use kilowatt hours, so you move it over, so it's about 3 cents. Now, if you use about 7,000 kilowatt hours a year, those are kind of the rough numbers we use based on just like loose averages for this part of the country. So 7,000 times that 3 cent premium is about $210 a year.
But I think we should dig into the price comparison, which we can...
Yeah, I'm happy to just...
Before we go on the price comparison.
Yeah, questions. Yep.
If you're already with a competitive supplier in the bottom left and you have a contract with them and you're automatically put into this other situation, are there...
So that doesn't happen, right? So if you're with a competitive supplier, you're not eligible for the aggregation program at its launch. Because it's not going to override a decision. You could have termination penalties. Who knows what your contract's like. So anybody that's with an alternative supplier, you're not going to get an opt-out letter. You're not going to be, you know, any of the letters that are mailed to participants, you're not going to receive those.
Okay.
What's been happening is that you find out, hey, oh, we've got this great program in town. You know, I've got this, you know, maybe you've had, as Kai mentioned, it seems like anybody that's been with an alternative supplier for any significant amount of time has almost always had a problem. Where all of a sudden they're like, wait a second, why's my bill so high? And all of a sudden they look. So you can always join the program. But at that point, the onus is on you to then join the program.
But it doesn't override,
It doesn't, take over.
So I'm with Arcadia right now.
Okay.
So walk through again what would happen.
So you have a different.
That's
okay. So you have a different supplier on your bill. It shows up as a different supplier.
Arcadia is not. I thought Arcadia was a supplier. That's community. Isn't that community solar? So that's virtual net meters. So you're just getting a financial credit.
Right.
So you should be able to do. You should be able to do both. This is supply, and that's a credit. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
No.
Arcadia is great too.
So just on the last question here, on the left side of the screen, there is some percentage of renewable attributable to each of those suppliers.
Which suppliers? The competitive suppliers?
The utility basic, the competitive,
right.
The competitive, the...
Right.
how does that compare to the 5%? I know that, you know, it's impossible because things change over time, but roughly speaking, where
in terms of cost?
No, in terms of the amount of the supply from the utility. What's Northeast Utility buying now that is renewable?
So the, I want to make sure I think I get the right question.
So they're buying, like the renewable. They're buying water, hydropower out of Canada all the time.
Yeah, so the utility currently, the utility basic supply is just consistent with the renewable energy standard in the state, which is 13.5% for now. With the competitive suppliers, you get to choose. So they have a menu of options, like either they'll have the basic, the standard service similar with the renewable energy standard. It's like the baseline that you can have. But you could choose 100% renewable product with North American power if you wanted, and you could be getting 100% renewable energy from, we don't necessarily know where. Sure. And so that would still be, then that would be your competitive supply percentage that you would have. And then you wouldn't necessarily move into the program because you already signed up with the competitive supplier. So I would say the basic to expect is that if it's with a, you, if you haven't asked for more renewable energy from either competitive supplier or the national grid, you're at the renewable energy standard right now. And then what we're talking about as a baseline is like, and 5% on top of that. I think I got the question.
I think that's right.
Okay.
But it's going to fluctuate. I mean, you know.
Well, it's going to grow.
Well, it's also going to vary depending on where they get the utility is buying its supply from.
Oh, where they're getting their supply, right. Not how much, being two different.
Well, how much is a function of where they're getting it from, too.
So this is mandated by the state to have 13.5, so that would be standard.
That's the baseline for... Right.
That's the minimum for that's any minimum. Electricity service.
National
state
grid is 13%. We're talking 18%.
Right.
If we don't go grid, we go this way.
Yeah.
But we're probably not looking at 13% for grid. We're probably looking for at something different that changes over time.
And that's the floor.
Right?
Yeah, and that's their floor.
I talked about this already a little bit. This was this whole model of the 5% from local was something that we pioneered with the city of Melrose. Since then, you can see the list of the cities and towns that have jumped on board since that first, since 2014. I don't have it listed here, but there's some what are called regional planning agencies in Massachusetts. They are like basically replaced like the, even though they have counties, they don't really have any type of governance. So they have these regional planning agencies that basically provide all kinds of shared services to regions and cities and towns. And we were selected by two of them, the largest one being Metropolitan Area Planning Council, that is the 101 cities and towns around Boston. And then the other one is the SERPET, which is the MAPC, but of the South Coast. So our list of communities is 42. These represent the ones that have done the additional local renewable energy.
Any in Rhode Island?
I'm sorry?
Any communities in Rhode Island?
Not yet.
No, we've been working with a bunch of communities doing this kind of thing. Providence is considering a resolution in its ordinance committee right now to start this process, so that Providence is at step one here, as are several other towns, and we're hoping some Southwest town can join that step one.
Yeah, so these are the steps, and there's obviously a lot more into it, but just at a high level, there's a resolution that gets passed. We create an aggregation plan. There's the regulatory approval by the Public Utility Commission, who we've already met with. Once you have approval of the PUC, that's when you have a competitive bid. And these are all the functions we do. Now, going on behind the scenes, there's all kinds of public awareness outreach. There's websites. There's flyers, there's different language groups, there's translation, there's hotlines, there's all the stuff so that you can really reach out to the community and make sure people understand the program, have their questions answered, understand what to do if they don't want to be in it, what to do if they do want to be in it. We never launch a program without savings, right? We're never going to, even though you only know what the rates are for 6 months, we would never launch a program upon launch where you're above basic service, right? That would just never be something we would look to do. There have been certain situations where a community has wanted to do that. because they just wanted to start the program and they wanted to just, even if they were a hair, it was basically even, they knew they'd be saving a ton in the winter, they just wanted to launch the program. But basically that's the communication to residents largely is around the rates. That's why often these programs start in the winter when the rates are traditionally higher. I know you're dying to get to the numbers, I can see. They're coming.
It's an easy one for me. The one that you showed that showed the history of what the costs are.
Yeah.
If you overlay what the cost would be with yours.
Yeah.
Oh, you're going to love it.
There we go.
So what do we have here? So this is the town of Brookline. And why Brookline is important is all the other communities, like we said, we're doing 5%. They came out and said, we're going to do 25% in our default product. Okay, and that 25% is represented by that green line that goes all the way across.
They didn't listen to you when they launched, huh?
Well, that was the community. Their view was that the basic, which is the orange line, which is without extra 25%, was below basic service.
Okay.
So that was their rationale that, hey, look, people have the option to go to the basic, and that's below basic service. But then you see how the program has fared since July of 2017 as compared to basic service. It's been a grand slam.
It's a home run. And to give you some context, that's a big difference between the basic and the green product. You're like, oh, it's like, it looks like, was it like half a centimeter? No, that's like, that's a lot. I mean, whatever it is, 8/10 of a penny, that's a lot of, that's a big difference. So if you were to do this at 5%, you'd be talking 1.5 tenths of a penny. They've got 8 tenths of a penny.
Yeah, and we have other communities here that I think are like Dedham. So Dedham launched their program in January of 2016. They have 5% extra renewable energy over basic service. And you see, they're obviously the orange line. There's been a couple of renewals. And the blue line is the Eversource basic service rate. So obviously the second period there where they were at 8.2, which we actually knew that was coming based on some of the capacity issues that were going on in the market. But you see that out of 8 rate change periods covering 4 years, that we were only above basic service once.
Do you usually sign really long contracts? The last one was like, did you sign a really long contract for?
30 months. This is 30 months, yeah. So, you know.
Between 2 to 3 years, 24, 30, 36.
And the reason for that is, again, that's where our advantage is. If there's value in the future years, that's something we can take advantage of
right.
That basic service cannot.
So if you're going out with the usual, are you going out with the usual suspects, like suppliers, like all the big guys?
No.
Or you?
How do you
leaders and get local renewable energy?
Well, that's where our relationship with green energy consumers lies. Yeah. That's why
so we do the renewable energy.
Yeah,
supplier does.
Supplier
and
provides.
And the real clever trick that we accomplished, was getting, as Stephanie alluded to earlier, getting the largest power companies in the country. These like Fortune 200 companies, worth billions of dollars. To get their very impressive attorneys to sit down and ink an agreement with Green Energy Consumers Alliance, which they didn't want to do because they're too important and special, but we forced them to do it. He said, you cannot bid on any of our programs unless you have an agreement with them because our clients want their product.
Yeah, just to give you an idea.
So the extra local comes from there.
So in Massachusetts, we're launching these programs a few years ago. If you look at the numbers, 97% of commercial and industrial customers, the large users of electricity, have changed supply. They're not on basic service.
Right.
You know, they're all. Well, why is that?
Well,
these
towns too.
Exactly.
Right.
Why is that? Because there's value there.
Right.
Well, why the numbers for residents was like 12%? Well, why?
Right.
Because there's no value there.
It's
and
a mind problem.
Because whoever's going after my house or your house, we're 6,000-7,000 kilowatt hours. Large load is 100 million kilowatt hours. So we use the leverage. Our buying group, when we first got in Massachusetts, we had 23 communities that all went to bid collectively. That's kind of our part of our specialty is doing these group purchases. It was 1.3 billion kilowatt hours. So these companies are looking, saying, all right, all the CNI is basically gone. This is the last, this is all that's left. So we got a bid on it. And we were like, ah, if you want to bid on this, we have to sort out your agreement with them. And that's really how we forced their hand to figure this out. And back to your question about suppliers, we have, I don't know how many suppliers call us and want to bid on our aggregations for the same reasons I just discussed.
Well, it's been a huge untapped market for such a long time. It's like, you think about it, like, no one wants to deal with a million homeowners. It's an administrative nightmare.
Right.
Arcadia is the only company in Rhode Island that wants to even touch the community solar. It's like, who wants to do that?
Right. So
if you find a way to do that, then.
That's exactly right. But we have to, a lot of times the suppliers, we have standards as to what suppliers we will allow to bid on these.
Yep.
Because we do not want a supplier who may have 1,000 CNI customers.
Right.
Whoa, you know, to them that's a lot. We got 1,000 customers. All right, well, just here, I think there's, 30,000 residents? You're probably looking at 10, 13,000 accounts here.
Right.
You know, and a CNI customer doesn't call up and say, my electricity's out, who do I call? You know, they don't do that, they're sophisticated. They've been doing this for 10, 20 years. A resident does call up and is clueless about this. So it's a very different type of consumer we're talking about. And that's why we don't entertain any suppliers bidding on these programs that don't have multiple years of experience in an aggregation. It doesn't have to be, obviously there are none in Rhode Island, it doesn't have to be specifically in Massachusetts or Illinois or California, just a supplier that has run these programs.
Who takes the hit if someone terminates?
The supplier.
The supplier does?
The supplier takes all the risk.
Yeah.
So like if you're a city or a town, you sign up for 12 months and you can't get out of your, it's very difficult and there's termination fees if you try to get out of your 12-month contract early.
Right.
So if there's no termination fees, I mean, I don't think you could convince any town to sign their residents up for this.
Right.
If there were termination fees,
right.
I'm wondering who...
The supplier takes on that risk. And part of the reason why suppliers really like bidding on our programs is because, and I don't have enrollment numbers here, but if I was to show you the city of Somerville, I think it's our largest city in Massachusetts, they launched a program at the same time. I think it's...
Here it is.
So they launched their program same time, July 2017. They have more people in the program today than they did in July 2017. Why is that? Well, because the orange line is below the blue line all the time. I mean, that's the simple reason. If the blue line was well underneath the orange line, so we've provided value, economic value, and everybody... may know the Attorney General, there was a big hoopla in Massachusetts about competitive supply and basically found out that they're profiling and targeting the elderly, people that don't speak English as a primary language, and low-income people. And that's what they did, right? I mean, we go to a lot of senior centers. Part of public awareness that we do is we go to senior centers, and it's pretty heartbreaking because I've been there, and they'll tell you, you know, they'll be like, I've been with National Grid for 40 years. There's no way I'm changing. We're like, all right, let me just look at your bill. And I look, I'm like, oh, you're with, like, blah, blah, blah energy supplier at 18 cents. They don't even know they've switched because their bill still comes on National Grid. So that's so a lot of people are having those experiences and then saying, you know what, even if the orange line was like even with that middle section 11397, so we'd actually been above basic surface, people are okay with that. They're realizing that there's value in the stability, there's value in the transparency, there's comfort in knowing it's been vetted not only by the state agencies but by the municipality. And we hear that more and more, even though we love the orange line below the blue line, we hear people say all the time, like, hey, look, my rates go from 8 cents in the summer to 12 cents in the winter. I'd just be happy if it was 10 cents year-round because that volatility throws me off. And that's what the competitive suppliers prey on. They prey on those rate changes. And, if you look at this past winter where it was 13,588 right there, and then you say, okay, that there were people getting solicited by the competitive suppliers saying, hey, I can get you 12 cents. Oh, I'm at 13.5. 12 cents is a great deal. Yeah, if you did nothing, you went to 10.8 in a month. And that happens all the time. So that's part of the reason suppliers like our programs is because we have like I said at the very beginning, once the program launches, you guys kind of, everybody moves on. It's like, okay, this is done. But really, it just starts for us. And we have that vested interest in making sure participation is high. So we never are like, okay, we're kind of done now. Let's move on to the next town. We always need to keep those numbers high.
So even if 80% opted out, it's never going to happen.
Yeah, even if the supplier is never going to change the rate. Let's just say you're the only one left in town on the program. They're not going to say, sorry, there's no minimum participation required.
Oh, yeah,
I just
want to
make sure that the town didn't have to take care of anything.
No, and that's a good question because that is where it's very different from standard procurement contracts, right? There is no out. I don't care who you are. You're not getting out without penalties. But it is one of the reasons why, you know, our competitors are often confounded as to how is it we can get a better rate, all things being equal. And it's because I have no doubt that it's the any uncertainty in the world of suppliers is reflected with margin, right? If they don't know if there's going to be 50% migration or 20%, well, they're going to account for that unknown with premium to account for that. Well, if there's a track record and they say, wow, these guys have gotten 7 years, they have Illinois, these guys really maintain that participation level high, well, we don't need all that premium. Well, that equals lower price. I mean, it's that straightforward. So there's a couple more of these charts, we go right into the savings. This is, it's not fully up to date in that it goes through June of this year, and we just found out the rates through the rest of the year, so it needs to be updated. But what it does show you is that even with the color doesn't seem to show up there, but those top communities are shaded because they all have extra renewable energy over basic service. You can see the furthest right column that says extra MA class 1 RECs. Those are the percentages. Even a town of Brookline that is 25%, right? So it's 25 years ahead of the RPS in terms of the renewable energy, still through June of this year saved 2.3 million? Yeah, $2.3 million. So that is how we view the, I'm sorry?
How many accounts is that?
They have about 20,000 accounts, 21,000 accounts.
So, and what's the population there? Just to get a sense of, yeah, like,
Brookline's like 65,000.
Okay, so double, give or take. More than double size.
Yeah.
Yeah. Double our size in the summer. So what made them go to the 25%? I'm just curious as to
Brookline.
Sort of cooling.
It's Brookline.
They wanted to really make a statement.
They,
make
a
they wanted to kind of like throw down the gauntlet, and also. What's ended up happening is that because the program has been so successful, where you had people even at that 25%, and what these charts actually don't show, and I think they should show, is where the 100% is. Because in many of these situations, the 100% is still below the basic service.
Yeah.
So this past winter, they had all these communities had this big push of, what was it called? Go 100, get 100, something like that. And they basically were telling people, go up to 100, you'll still save money from basic service. I mean, it was going to be pennies, but the message is you could go 100 and still benefit from the program.
So, I'm sorry, and I'm not always a numbers person, but it's fascinating. So you've got 50% participation in Brookline at the 25%.
No. So Brookline
participation is like
93%. Yeah. 90. Out of those 20,000, there's about 200 at the basic, which is like no extra renewable energy, and then there's about 600 that have gone up to the 100%.
Okay.
But even though 600 doesn't sound that high, you know, every one of those is for the other one, so it's 2,400 people. And when you add up all the renewable energy and so forth, it's really quite meaningful. I thought it would be too much, but we actually have a chart that shows all the equivalencies of all of this renewable energy, and it's dramatic.
So we should be Brookline and be 30%.
You should go 30. Yeah. I recommend starting at
26 at least.
if you can show an orange line below basic service, I think it's a no-brainer for the town to do as an offering and with the opt-out option, right?
So there But their basic default was 25%.
Right, exactly.
So 93% of people stated that, or 90% of people were like...
No, no, 90, they they, the last I looked, there was like 93% participation.
They're all in.
So out of 93%, you have 200 went down to the basic, you have 600 that opted for the 100, and so the remaining...
But what, to be clear, what's more typical? I mean, is it this line in a more realistic, this happens, and all of our guns are particularly successful, but, you know, full disclosure, generally this line would be a little bit higher.
Yeah.
Right? Generally you're going to be slightly underwater in the summer, and you're going to be saving in the winter. Right? That's generally what happens. These are very successful programs. And I'd love to sit here and go, every program's going to be very successful. But what I would say is, our commitment to you is that we will make sure you save money over the duration of the contract. And to date, we've saved money for 100% of our programs. But the disclaimer is, we can't sit here and guarantee we've got a crystal ball on future rates.
Right.
What we can do is, we have these inherent advantages we can buy when we want, for as long as we want. Huge advantage. So I always use the example, if an energy consultant came into you and said, hey, I'm a consultant, this is my strategy, I always buy it on the two same days every single year. You'd be like, get out of my office, haven't got time. That's what the utility does. Right? And it's not their fault, that's what they have to do. We're nimble. We're like the guerrilla fighters, we can move around, we can buy what we want. And also, crucially, we can hold off. So something we call strategic patience. City of Gloucester, they had their plan approved. We waited, was it 15 months?
Their plan was approved January 2017. They launched their program December of 18.
We won't start
23 months.
We won't start your program until we got clear savings in set up for the residents. So we will wait for years.
And we have to actually fight them to not start their program. Because they're like, we've been working on this for 2 years. We want to go. There were certain market dynamics with capacity and stuff.
Unusual.
They were so disadvantaged against basic service. We said, we have to wait for this to subside. They weren't happy, but we've got, you know, we don't look at this as like a one and done. We want to have long-standing programs. Now they're thrilled because, in hindsight, when they saw the rates, they would have been in a bad spot. And so, even though we get paid that 1 cent per a tenth of a penny per kilowatt hour, so you think our incentive is purely to get you out to bid because we're working for 2 years without making money, we want to start getting that back. That's never the driving force. If we don't think the market is advantageous, we'll just start.
Yeah, you're way in business for long term, obviously.
So can the residents change their level of
energy? Yes. Okay. They can go from, that's what I was saying, in Somerville and Brookline, there was the push for 100. So they were trying to get people to go up to 100 in the winter and then say, hey, you could go back down to 5% in the summer. But, you know, let's have 6 months at 100%. It'll make a big difference. They did get quite a few people. We get part of what we're really working on now is the data side of this, because we have so much data. So we're looking, you know, we look back at data and look at participation levels, but really being able to get more into that. But yeah, they wanted to monitor. Hey, we did this program in town to get people up to 100. They wanted to see in real time how effective it was. So,
yeah, and I think we're close to the end of the presentation, right? So one thing to bear in mind, so Rhode Island is, it's active from the point of view that you can submit a plan to the Public Utilities Commission, but there are still parts behind the scenes that haven't been necessarily figured out. Something called purchase of receivables we're working on. But long story short, to get the state to be able to actually authorize a program that can then go out to bid, communities need to move forward, right? And there are advantages to moving forward, which is you can obviously set the tone for the communities that come behind. We saw that with Melrose. Melrose went first. They said, we're going 5. The rest of the state followed. Even a bunch of communities never thought about it. So for example, say you went forward and said, hey, we're going 10. Everybody's going to follow 10, right? So it's a real chance to be a leader community. And like I said, Providence is moving forward. It's Providence. It's going to take a bit more time. So a slight call to action here is, I know you have certain protocols to follow, et cetera, but we're definitely looking for a community or communities that want to take the initiative and be leaders in this field. Because there's no doubt about it, it focuses the PUC's commission where they have real communities that are actually coming here. We want to start our program.
We met with the PUC and they said the law, everything's theoretically in place, but they're not really going to start doing anything around this until they see a community that's doesn't mean we're working. And that's another thing that's important to say is that all this really does is you have the opportunity to explore. That's the way we do this. At no point is a community committed to those steps we showed before to go to the next step. At any point in time, you can say, hey, you know what, we've changed our mind, we don't want to do this. There's no cost to the community, there's no commitment, there's no obligation. So it's really just about exploring the opportunity. That's the word that's always used.
Yeah, that is a key point. You can go through the whole process and you can back out at the last minute. Not a problem. No commitment until the day you sign a contract.
I missed out at the beginning. Do you have any other Rhode Island communities?
None have ever done this. No one's done it.
I mean, it is a no-brainer, like you said, but it takes time and energy, and also Rhode Islanders don't always love being the first ones to do things.
And a town council has to do it.
Anyone at the UC or just the first one to do it?
They all have.
Everybody has. So the state oversight now from every single plan.
I mean, Providence should also be.
It's a no-brainer everywhere.
Good. We'll sign you up.
Fast nimble.
They were tripped up this month by their budget discussions.
Yeah.
Mayor and the Hawaii, all that stuff.
And then a school report. Yeah. I mean.
So describe the contract relationships at the end of the process. Who's contracting with whom for what?
So you sign a contract with the supplier. The town or city signs a contract with the supplier for a specific term at a specific rate.
And you've got a contract with whom?
And we're hired by the town. So good question. So we get hired by the town. You never have an agreement with Green Energy Consumers Alliance. They have an agreement with the supplier. Right, so you hire us and say we want you, and our agreement is a two-page. People have often just commented that it's almost a joke because there's no, you can fire us at any time. There's no, like, you know, 4-year term. You can't get rid of us if you don't think we're doing a good job.
Yeah, you can
fire us.
Terminate one day for the next.
You can terminate us.
So there's two contracts. One with the winning supplier to move forward, but obviously before that, contract with us, which outlines basically the services we'll do for you. It's more of a statement of understanding about what we'll do for you.
And those services are what?
Those services are everything from create the aggregation plan, get it through the PUC, provide any feedback to PUC, they have questions, do any of the public meetings.
But I mean, the steps that you've outlined have us doing PUC approval fairly early in the process.
Right? Yeah.
Long before we're signing a contract
correct.
With the supplier.
Correct.
Right.
So
correct.
When are we signing that contract?
The contract with the supplier.
With us?
Yeah.
So that happens step. As soon as you pass
the
coordinate.
There is a contractual liability then that comes in early in the process.
No,
because you can fire us at any time.
And you don't pay
it's
us
a
either.
Contractual obligation, and payment is only after a
successful. Only in the event of a successful contract.
So I understand.
So
the liability is only whatever the two pages say.
It's a contingent liability in the event
they
that.
Said they usually do this for 2 years without getting paid first.
Yeah.
It's actually good that this is starting in the summer, right? Because if it takes 6 or 7 months through the PUC and everything, we'll save money.
Yep. I mean, here's the thing. Ideally, your programs are starting in November next year.
And one of the other things.
November next year?
Yes.
2020?
November next year. If you start now.
Why?
Because we've got to get this through the PUC. So I'll tell you exactly why. Okay, let's say. So Wednesday, so it's going to go to council next week. So we want to do this. You go, okay, fine. We're going to sign up with Good Energy. We then have to write a plan. It goes back to council and gets approved. Then we go submit to the PUC. The PUC then goes through the process of the first plan to go through, right? That's why we need someone to get moving here. The process will get streamlined later. That's going to take somewhere between 3 and, say, 7 or 8 months. We get out the other side, we then have to collect the data, run a competitive bid, and there needs to be a 30-day opt-out period when people are entitled to opt-out. That's going to be starting just in time for winter next year, which is why we need to get moving. Yeah.
Yeah, if we go back to the charts here, So if you look, the winter typically has the higher rates.
Yeah.
So that's often why you're, even if your plan is approved in May and we're good to go,
you don't want to start till then.
We may not be able to get in below the summer rates.
I was thinking like January, February 2020, we can get going.
Me too. But
so the issue from my perspective is that there's more involved. There's a 1B from my perspective, and that would be some sort of procurement competition. It's going to have to be something other than just hiring out a consultant.
You're always free to do that. I can tell you that in Massachusetts, and I think it's also in Rhode Island, that cities and towns are exempt from having to run that, and that in Massachusetts there's been a handful of towns that did RFPs and a handful of towns that did not.
We would need more information on that.
Sure.
Okay.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Because we're not, we wouldn't be, the town wouldn't be
right.
paying you. We're not necessarily.
Right.
That's.
That might be the exemption.
That's the exemption, is that it's below.
But to make sure things don't
levels.
Look icky, too, because sometimes
yeah.
it might as well just be.
That's why the town council ends up saying no to it.
Right.
Because
right.
it looks icky.
So the and the element that slightly mitigates that is the fact that someone needs to get this market moving, right? So this isn't kind of like your standard, hey, this is active, we're just, everybody's doing it. It's kind of like, we actually have a ton of work to do to get this market moving.
Right.
We've got to get National Grid talking to the PUC. We've got to get a community to push it through the system. You know, we've got a ton of stuff to do, so it's a slightly unusual situation. We've won our biggest bits of business in Massachusetts because of competitive bids, right? Done a lot of that. We're in a situation now where we just need communities to move fast so we can get the process started. So.
Maybe it's not even an issue. Like the solar lamp that we did on the landfill, is that, that's owned by us?
Persage,
okay. So that would basically just become another supplier that these guys could buy.
I'm not sure about that facility, but is that used for municipal power specifically? So that would be, that's used to power here, but not
But it's the same thing as it's virtual net
metering.
Right, yeah, so it's CO6 rate. It's like some of it's the supply side, some of it's
right.
transmission. So it's like what you're doing on a bigger scale.
Okay.
So it should you should be able to do both.
Okay.
Just
I'm just not sure the size of it.
Oh, so we get what, 25% of it? I think we get 25%
of it.
Yeah, so
there's actually two. There's one in San Juan and one in West Village. So
yeah, that one's
they're
on
too large here.
Yeah,
there's a lot of solar involved there. And it actually is a project of South Kingston, Narragansett, and the University of Rhode Island, which is just backstopping the whole thing. The University of Rhode Island buys anything.
Right. And that's one of the things that we've always wanted to be clear about, is like making sure that we see the distinction between municipal aggregation of actual municipal accounts from municipality running an aggregation program on behalf of its residents and saying like these are two different things.
Yeah, that's why in Massachusetts the law is called municipal aggregation, but it's like it totally moved to the side because it was so confusing to people. Residents like, why am I getting what do I care what the town does with the schools and stuff like, why do I, you know, so that's why we use CEA, CCA, we don't use the proper legal terminology.
Sports
do you do aggregation for universities?
We do have an aggregation in New Jersey of several hundred schools.
We'll aggregate anything, but it's just this product would, I mean, technically a university would be included if it hadn't already chosen another supplier, but they would have done it. But we actually, so Good Energy is going 20 years, came out of the commercial industrial procurement space, and then moved into municipal government back in 2007. So we came in here through actually aggregating schools and city government buildings, and then the law came out, we're like, okay, perfect fit for us, we know how they work. So, yes.
So, do you happen to know, have you thought about whether the Rhode Island rules allow for sort of a regional approach?
They do.
In fact, it encourages it.
Yeah.
Regional is good up to a point, right? You do not want to move as fast as the slowest boat. right? So what you do then is you have like train departure times, like this group's leaving in like January of 2020. This group's leaving because otherwise you end up waiting for people. Because some communities move faster, and also incentivize people to get moving.
And the structure we did in Massachusetts, we launched 23 communities that are just in the south coast of Massachusetts. It's not a formal agreement, so it's not like what they did at the Cape Light, which was an intergovernmental agreement.
Yeah.
And they had one plan submitted. Your PUC is their DPU. So they submitted one plan to the DPU on behalf of all of the communities on Cape Cod. We didn't like that. We didn't like the structure. We didn't like how long it took to get approved. So our agreement is a totally informal agreement. Every community submits their own plan. Every community goes through their own approval. There's flexibility written into the plan so that by the time you get the PUC approval, and maybe you have a few neighboring towns nearby that have their approval at similar times, and you can say, hey, let's explore this group purchase and see if there's a value. If it makes sense, you go down that road. There's no formal agreement between the towns. If somebody decides they've changed their mind, it's very easy to just split and part ways. So it's we feel like it provides the best of every option for the community.
And any community can duck out whenever they want. So the principle really is individual autonomy, right? So no, it's not like little one like, oh no, I have to do what the big one's doing. It's like little one can be like, I'm out. You know.
So this is a question I have. Could you put in your plan the town of South Kingston would prefer to do it with as a group purchase, but if none of the other cities are ready by January 2020, we'll go ahead and do it on
So here's the neat thing. Here's the neatest thing about it. You don't even need to put it in the plan, right? The beauty of this is that it's like a sharing economy. It's like people will work together without an agreement. Sounds crazy, but it's true, right? So if there are seven or eight towns around here that want to do it together, you will all go out together, you'll all go to bid together, and you'll all sign on the same day. It'll happen without any agreement between you. Partly because there isn't any agreement between you, so you don't feel in any way that your freedom of movement is under pressure.
Yeah, and the only thing, if you have a group of communities, the only thing you have to agree on is the term, right? So we want to do a 3-year contract or a 2-year contract. Well, you can't do 2-year and another community do want to do 3 years. But what you can maintain your autonomy on is the renewable. So you can say, we're going to do 2 years and we're going to do 10% above the RPS. Another community says, we're in on the 2 years, but we're only going to do 5%, or maybe they'll do 15, whatever it is. So you get to maintain your independence as it relates to the renewable options. And that's because communities have very different, they may have different goals, right? I mean, we have New Bedford, Fall River, a third of the population below the poverty line. Then we have large cities. Then we have Marion, Mattapoisett, wealthier communities that only have a couple of thousand people. They're not going to necessarily want to do the same thing as far as their program goes, but I tell you what, Marion really benefited from jumping on that big bandwagon of New Bedford and Fall River, so it was something in it for them. I'll tell you that your size community, you'll be probably, I would guess, 80 million kilowatt hours a year on kind of the low side, 10,000, maybe 75. That's a fine number. You may not consider yourselves a large community, but in the world of energy, that's a big number. That's like 3 Empire State Buildings. You're going to get a good commercial quality type of rate for your program. It's really the ones that we encourage. We just had Millis, right? Millis in Massachusetts, very small. They need to wait for, there was no community going to bid at that time, so they're going to try and jump on the bid wagon with the city of Waltham when we expect to go to bid next winter. So I would say there's value in it, but for a city your size, you could go it alone and do absolutely fine. We just actually spoke with a supplier yesterday that's looking a bit on our, and they said their sweet spot is 50 to 100 million kilowatt hours a year. When you get too big, gigantic, it's not always the direct advantage.
How'd you find your way down to South Kingston? I mean, I don't know which town, which municipalities you've been chatting with.
We reach out to everyone. I don't know a lot of interest so far. I do those things.
They were the forward air traffic controllers.
We're meeting. What do we get here?
Yeah. Yeah, Priscilla, I presented.
Yep.
And
what was
that? Of course,
Abel
Collins.
Oh, here, the dark spot.
Yeah, I'm in Kansas.
Yeah. Gigantic.
I'd like to look it up in our committee. There's one yes.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Rob, you got this?
What's that?
You got to start with Rob.
Well, one thing I want to learn about, a lot more about, which would probably be its own meeting, but I think it's really important, is your outreach. How do you how do you get people to think you're not a scam? I know you said you kind of glossed over it, but I think that's really important.
No, and you're right. That is its own meeting, and then it's its own, you know, 20-page slide presentation we've had communities that wanted to create for the program, create a fancy website and a flashy logo. And you know, we'd sit there and say, you know what the best logo is for this program? Right there. Because that is, the, you know, anything that starts to get too flashy, well, then it starts to look like those retail offers. But we have a whole methodology and approach. And having done this for almost 200 communities, in Illinois, they required passage of a referendum. So, you know, we really are... our methodology really takes all the weight off of the, it's not a heavy load, even though you may look at that, we're doing all the heavy lifting and the interaction with the community is really kind of on a decision-making. We'll look to you for direction for public awareness and outreach and maybe different groups in town that you think, you know, we should have a meeting with or make some documentation for as part of the outreach campaign. But everything else, you know, we've done it all. It's a very light lift on staff time and resources.
I think this is where one of the big benefits of how experienced Good Energy is. My first one of the first times I met these guys was at a meeting with a bunch of town staff from Massachusetts who were part of their programs, just giving feedback on outreach. It was like a whole meeting that was the bulk of it.
Cool.
So it's definitely hard, and I'm sure you all know how hard it is for towns to communicate with their own residents sometimes, but...
It's a big part of it, and again, it's for selfish reasons. We want to make sure we reach everybody. We don't want people to opt out because they just are confused or they think it's something else. That's not good for us. So
yeah. You know. Oh no. Yeah, I'm sure you guys are good at it. I just like that's for like Solarize, for example. Yeah. That's like a big part of why it works. Is they have like here's the things we do. So I just I never.
I mean, it's like
that.
Mailers, public meetings,
and that's part of the good thing about the fact that it takes. You know, it's not like you say yes today and we're live in a month and we have a million things to do. It takes a year.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of time to strategize and plan and do little events here and there, and then as the time comes and we get approval and we think we're going to bid, it ramps up, and then you have the 30-day opt-out period where we're sprinkling in all kinds of, you know, events, you know, council meetings, all farmers markets, whatever it may be, to just get the word out there. So there's a whole strategy around that.
Cool.
But also, I mean, if anyone from South Kingstown has ways that are specifically good to reach South Kingstown residents, then that's the way to go.
Yeah, we've had some communities that have, funny enough, the town of Millis, that's so small, they have a, out of, I think, 3,600 residents, they have 2,700 in a email that they do. They send a newsletter every week of what's going on in town and stuff like that. I was like, wow. Millis says that's the town. So sometimes there's vehicles like that we can leverage.
Neighbor knowing neighbors.
We've done things like tax bills and water bills, things that everybody will get and everybody opens. So there's a lot of things that we can do when it comes to that. Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Are there contacts or references in some of the...
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Sure.
Gone ahead and done it, but also some that have decided not to or gone out to RFP.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll make sure we get it to you.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have more business?
We do have more business.
Leave it to us. Thank you.
I will have your information for a little.
Yeah, great.
Let's see if I have enough business cards with me to make that happen.
Thank you.
I'm sure I can email the presentation around, things like that.
There's some cards.
Oh, perfect. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
my co-op just spirit. Sorry, you go ahead, Scott.
That's great. Yeah, this is a lot of good information.
Yeah. Yeah. Covers a lot of ground, but, you know, we're in good shape.
We need to cover that ground.
Yes.
All right, well, thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you,
so
thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
Very nice.
Enjoy the rest.
We all know your thing about renewable energy programs. It was very impressive.
We do our best.
So, thank you for your great
work. There will probably be more.
I mean, we think, yeah. Yeah. Migration is great.
It makes sense to go down to RFP.
Even just for visual. You know, perception is reality.
What the
thank you very much.
I mean, we obviously think we're the best people, but
of
it's
course.
Worse doing your homework.
Of course. But then at least you've got to RFP, and it's an easy choice, and it's like, see, we can
do it.
Yeah. All
right. Oh, hey,
have a great evening.
Yeah.
Take care.
Good. Nice. Just yell at me. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. After I said out, like, I'm
confused. I obviously came from the wrong night, the wrong meeting. I thought this was the channel. The Alzheimer's
planning. No, nope. My guess would be it's the next planning board meeting, which is.
I was told it was tonight.
What is the meeting that you're looking for?
It's the Alzheimer's final planning board meeting.
Oh. Okay.
Hopefully. So this is the energy. I know you.
Yeah. You made the fiberglass.
Sustainability.
Yeah.
The cardboard.
Yeah.
Quonset.
Yeah. I just got a request for a bid from Australia.
Cool.
Next Tuesday.
Next Tuesday.
7 o'clock.
Okay. So are you 23rd. Are you the sustainability committee?
Yes.
Oh,
he built one of the first solar carports in the state with like all carbon fiber,
sweet.
Unique design, and it's in Quonset. It's actually beautiful.
That's it.
Oh, shit.
Didn't break.
This is a nice.
What's that in the minutes?
Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a cool one.
Oh my god.
So, because you're talking to an aggregator.
Right.
Are you thinking about sort of handing them the power to decide where the solar is going to go, or what?
It's this is like a
They're a municipal aggregator.
So not necessarily a global, it's a third party supplier. They'll shop for a third party supplier for us with a focus on additional renewable energy if we choose, and it would be local. They're promising is New England. Not necessarily in town or anything like that. So we wouldn't be involved with locating it, but we would just be in charge of kind of indirectly funding it through the supply side.
Can I ask you, since I'm here, I don't want to be rude, but are you supporting solar farms?
We haven't really talked about it yet.
Yeah, that hasn't.
I'd like to come back when you do that.
I think there is, the town has. Through it,
we have an ordinance.
An ordinance for how land can be developed and how much, what percentage of space can be developed for solar installations.
Yeah,
I don't like
sure
all
it's
farms
in total lines with what the state is on. For one thing, but
so
anyways, it's important to.
I think South Kingston has taken a lead in that as far as. Not like some towns which have, been impacted by not making ordinances and development has occurred
one note.
Outside of control.
Yeah. If you're going to keep this discussion going, you should amend your agenda.
Anyway,
okay.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you.
Do you think it's necessary?
Not now that it's over.
Okay. Great. Okay, so that was great.
So, I'm just curious if we can do three before we go on. I know we got other stuff.
So, it's on the agenda for discussion purposes only. The only thing you can't do is take action on this tonight. You can talk about it, you can share your thoughts on it, you cannot
What's your thoughts? That's what I'm most interested in. Are you allowed to share your actual?
I think that there's support for anything that reduces the cost for consumers.
Yeah,
I mean, that's just an easy thing for a town council, for a town government to say you should be behind saving people money. The challenge with these things, I think, is in helping people differentiate real savings from the promised savings they've been hearing about for years. So distinguishing this from the fly-by-nights who have been ripping folks off for years.
Right.
And you sure don't want the municipal government to be tagged with being associated by somebody who's just going to reduce your rate for a month, and then you're tied in at a higher rate than you would be otherwise.
But they have these long-term contracts, and I think having close neighbors like Massachusetts.
The other thing is, coming in through the Sustainability Committee, our focus really shouldn't be 100% savings. It should be, look, we can keep your costs the same or slightly below, so everybody's going to save a little bit, but we can have this huge impact on sourcing renewable energy.
Right.
And I'm just afraid that if we started down that road, it very quickly gets hijacked into, but if we do this, we can all save money.
Right.
And it's not really a
That option's available to each consumer under these designs. So you come in at 10%, everybody's opts in automatically in at 10%, with the option to go down to zero if they want. So you get the real savings, the absolute best savings you can, by opting out of the 10%. So, there's something in here. There's a safety valve for any citizen who is saying, look, you shouldn't have made a choice for me.
Yeah. I like the solar is great for everybody, both from, financial perspective and just whatever your house looks like.
Yeah.
So I like the fact that we can get other people to fight for, even, put... Do that for 10% and your renewables anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of like that.
I think that's a great solution.
Sure. And sustainability is financial as well in some definitions, maybe not ours, but
I like that they're partnered with, obviously.
It's true.
I mean,
right.
It seems like a very flexible program as far as everyone has their choices and how what they want to do.
One of the things I really like about renewable energy is that we've gotten to the point in a lot of creative circumstances like this where you don't have to give a rat's ass about the environment and it's still a great choice to make too.
Yeah.
We've gotten there, So
sustainable building, supplies, all that.
Right, and even in energy, we're getting there.
Yeah.
So it's like you can save money while still contributing to this.
I'm a fan of repurchasing, period. So we've got people that have leverage.
Which actually gets to my point, though. I mean, at some point, these things are going to flip. At some point, grid or Eversource is going to be, at 18%, just because that's where the market is. That's who's producing.
Well, they're gonna
when you can buy from Hydro-Québec at nothing...
Right.
You buy from Hydro-Québec.
And the side of the bill that's consistently going up right now is not the supply side they're talking about.
Right.
It's transmission distribution. That's literally and figuratively National Grid's overhead. That's the cost of them doing businesses. And that's not... So what you're doing is a little bit of both with the virtual net metering. This is just supply. But, he said 2 or 3 years. I mean, nothing... Our energy picture isn't going to change that dramatically in 2 or 3 years.
Plus, to prevent us
to charge that same 1/10 of a cent, is that their charge for that? So, I mean, we're...
There's a renewable energy charge that goes to the renewable energy fund.
Yeah.
It's really small. I think the entire state, it's like $2 million a year for the whole state.
So if you'd like, I can put this on the agenda for further discussion and or action at the next meeting.
I really want to know more about their marketing plan. I think that's the only way to figure out if it's going to come across as greenwashing or not. And I think that I think that the idea of going out to RFP, whether it's, you know, even if it's a short window, we say we want to get moving on this, just to make sure there's no one else out there, and just for optics, is probably a good idea.
Well, I think that this community has kept their eyes wide open, because I've seen that Solarize meeting,
the first
kickoff meeting, and we couldn't stand in this room for something.
That's
right.
So I think that they, a lot of people will be into this.
Whether we call this a sustainability forum or not, something that brings them together in addition to their marketing plan. What I would love to see is then bring some of the folks from these other Massachusetts communities that have been within to hear, you know, so that we understand that it's not greenwashing. It's very different hearing from actual other towns that have gone through it.
Right.
Their challenges, their successes, you know, time, you know, all that.
Right.
Well, with the ability to opt out at any time, it definitely makes sense that they're going to try to do their best to keep rates competitive. And
it's in their best interest. They make money by having a contract, and that's part of the value that they're selling.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm glad there's a business in it.
Good.
Great. So moving on, we've got not a lot of time, but I think maybe we should spend the remainder of the time talking about the mission that we worked on last week and just
approve it.
Totally finalize it.
Yeah.
All right. Has anyone got a copy of it?
Great question.
Because I looked for Jay just before he left, and you don't have it.
Okay.
He has the only document. Did he not?
Did he email it? He must have emailed
it's emailed.
Because he wanted to.
Okay. I don't.
It wasn't in the latest email. Did he?
He emailed it
no,
with
it
the.
No, it was like after the last meeting.
No, it was right after the last meeting. He emailed the your thing that you had put together and emailed the.
Oh, yeah, because I was surprised that it wasn't already approved. Because didn't we have a form at the last one?
Yeah.
I
yeah, but
really
we didn't
we had a very
feel
good
right.
discussion, though.
Good.
Hey,
town guests. That's who I am.
The other one's not looking at
something.
Look at each other.
Yeah.
Well, if you find it, Rob, you can display it, right?
Yep.
I don't have a smartphone.
He sent it on June
17th.
Okay, let me just go there then.
At 8:08.
June 17th, huh?
Never mind. I do have a couple.
You want me to forward it to your
little.
Yeah, if you would, that's good.
For next time, I want to just.
Yeah.
Travel off when we get there. I can do the whole thing in 90 seconds.
Wow.
By the way, I will not be here the next meeting.
Okay.
I don't know what our flexibility is. I mean, obviously, people are going to have to buy
another one? You're crazy.
Okay.
I actually won't be here either on the 19th because I have a planning board meeting somewhere else.
Okay.
26th? Are you around? Was it 26th?
Monday the 26th?
Uh-huh.
That's actually the only Monday in August I can do.
That's the only one I can do.
I can do that.
I'm fine with it too, but.
We only have one in August.
Okay.
Alright. So. Give it a final read through, I guess? Like
yeah, are we sure this is the most recent?
He sent this.
That's it.
If that's
I
the
think
one.
If you click on Tony's, I think you have it more. Did you consolidate it on your email?
I don't think I did anything. Let me just look up. Sorry. I thought you just sent it, so I wasn't looking for it.
Yeah,
sounds
Our last meeting was June.
That I could probably find.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah.
17th. I must have sent it out right after. Oh, 808. Yeah. Sent it out 8 minutes after.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is what we've got then.
Does someone want to read it? Because I'm blind.
Yeah, I can increase the font size too.
Do we treat it?
We'll see. There we go.
Oh yeah, the business down.
The only thing that always drives me nuts about this is the university.
What?
That thing where just the university, what does that mean? You know, it's...
Everyone knows what it means, that's the thing.
There's only one.
Yeah, well, you know, that's better. Because
hey, naturally, you played out
Harvard?
Easy.
Harvard?
Yeah.
What is this? I've heard of it. It's actually a really fun joke to play. They introduce themselves
as
going to Harvard, which you never heard of it. Nothing that makes them go mad.
What's that?
Oh, sorry. It is funny, though.
See, it worked out right.
I'm sorry. I've never done that, I swear.
Sorry,
it's spelled backwards.
Oh, see? Look at that. So, just some small tweaks. Sustainability Committee of South Kingstown. Is it South Kingstown Sustainability Committee? Just, is there a formal name? Do you want to change it?
I think it sounds better that way.
Which way?
The way you just said it.
Yeah.
South Kingstown.
Yeah, you don't do the planning board of South Kingstown. It's the South Kingstown plan.
Sustainability issues with the energy, I think that's a solid statement.
I mean, are we actually committees maintaining the dashboard? That part, I like the establishment.
Yeah, because the data has to come from the town. How would the town impact data into the dashboard?
Well, would you put a deadline on it?
I mean, basically, we're helping to establish the notion of a dashboard.
And you're also taking ownership for it, which, you know, if you want, that's a good thing, because nobody else will.
Right.
So, yeah. Like,
is that going to go on the website?
Yep.
Website?
It would. I mean, you could take ownership for it. But right, exactly. This way, they own it, and they tell you to do it.
Yeah, right.
Works out. Just editorial. Just
what we should do is make sure that we get another, if we get any other members, and we get a real techie nerd up here to do our dashboard for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean,
I mean that in the most
respectful way possible. Nerds are awesome.
We need them. A lot of skills that I lack.
Really, when it's just, and it's just a wordsmithing, and I don't really, if I were to change one, it'd be the second to last paragraph.
Which is?
The raising awareness of the
ignoring. Yeah, that's going to be more.
It's like just a mouthful of a lot of words.
I think it's also.
The committee will host, or I don't even know if that's the one about the forums or not, or it's just about the.
Forum is a tool that fits into this.
Yeah.
I like it.
That's much simpler.
Yeah. And it says to itself.
The one about the community evaluation is in the concepts and ideas. Should the word opportunities be in there too? Or are you evaluating opportunities and opportunities?
Which one? Where are we? I'm lost.
Ideas.
The committee evaluates the concepts and ideas.
Concepts.
The one that was above the paragraph before we just did.
Down.
Fourth.
There you go. Concepts
and opportunities.
Opportunities and ideas.
And opportunities and ideas. The other document says the South Kingstown Sustainability Committee. We even have an acronym, SKSA.
Do we put a request for additional members in this, or does that go somewhere else?
That's in the other one.
Yeah, it can be in.
It's in the other document.
In the other that he sent.
What was the other document?
Let's open it up.
Yeah. That has that where this is going to go and replace this.
Nope, I opened the wrong one again.
Mission statement, and then the charge, that charge will go into this document, then that one. Yeah. So that yellow highlighted goes away and gets replaced with what we just edited.
Okay.
And this is the.
Yep.
Yeah.
So let's do this. What was the other document?
Just cut and paste it in there now?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. The standing committee of the town. Do you need management behind waste?
I think it was in the other.
Huh?
Do you need management here?
Promote
responsible energy, waste management, and water stewardship. I think that it's necessary.
Well,
just to
energy.
Responsible energy, waste, and water stewardship.
Okay.
Energy and waste.
That's a three-parter.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
All right.
That's it.
That's it. Do it.
I know that's how you feel.
Huh?
I agree. But I just want to make sure everybody's good with it. And I also want to understand what we do with it.
I like it a lot. I think it's in leaps and bounds
password we were before.
I was imagining that once we get this approved, then we have we put out an invitation for others to join. There's been some folks that, a lot of good folks that have shown some interest.
My concern is getting too big too fast.
Yeah.
And I would think that we go to 7, and if we can.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I think we've had numerous people suggest that too large of a committee is.
Yeah.
Try
7 for a while.
Yeah.
Are you guys afraid that I'm going to make it? That's too big.
No, this is where we put up to 9.
No, no,
so
I got it. Yeah, no, it's good.
You have to go back.
That's good. Let's just put out the thing and see who shows up. And
we need to put this in front of the council first.
That's why I sent that PowerPoint presentation that I think got sent out to everyone, right?
Yep, I got it.
Okay. So my thought is that at the same time, we should give them an update on what we've been up to. Like, we haven't interacted with the town council. We're serving the town council.
Okay.
So here's what's been going on so far. Here are some of the proposed changes, and here's some of our hopes for community. That's what I would imagine.
Can we limit the size of the committee? So if we say we want to have up to 9, can we then tell the town council we want to have 7, or?
You could, but it's just a recommendation to the council.
Right.
I mean, once they set the number, they can go to that number if they so choose.
Okay. Because they will be doing interviews and choosing the people.
So we'll be better off that we go to 7, and then if we want to expand it later on, go back to the town council?
Then they'd have to modify it up. And by the way, you could offer is proposed 9 here, and they may reduce it to 7 on their own. I mean,
right.
they can do mm-hmm. whatever that you are their committee.
So, yeah. What's the best way we move forward on this?
What do you think? We really want 7 for now.
So, why do you say 9?
Because we don't want to go back.
Well, why not? I mean, they like you. They're not going to fight you. Are you
sure about that?
Who are the people that we actually want? Like,
a techie nerd.
But we don't have that choice, though. I mean, the town council is going to go and put out a.
That's correct. You're going
to
get an advertiser.
But we have people that, you know, like, I think of, what's his name?
But we have no say.
I understand that, but there's the quality of the people that we put in front of them. Why am I saying some of those names?
We don't even have to look at them first. Anybody could apply.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Yeah.
But you get to push people and encourage people and get them to show up. Yeah. Right?
What happens if there are only 2 open spots, though, and 6 people apply?
They choose. There was more when we were chosen, and there was other people.
If you look at the names. There were?
Yes. They didn't just pick us.
I made the team.
We made the team.
Wow. I thought it was like CYO basketball, where they're like, please
say
come.
Say the number you'd prefer, 7 or 9.
Prefer to have or prefer to ask for?
How many would you actually prefer to have?
On the committee. At this point in time, 7.
Yes.
7.
Same.
7. Okay. Then put it at 7. I mean, I think we can go to 9, and all we have to do is go back and ask.
They still could be.
I did not know that more people applied than the spots that were here.
Yes.
This is the best of the best. This is the 18th.
I've been down this pool all day. I'm sorry I didn't read your PowerPoint. It looks really small on my screen. I'm going to read it later.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So we have to bring this to the town council and say, hey, let us do this.
So you have to agree as a group that you want to do that. So you need a motion to do that.
I make a motion to amend our mission statement and charge with the draft that we have been so diligently working on for the past 4 months. It encompasses everything that we've been working on and that we've identified with as a committee.
I second it.
Lovely.
Does the motion have to be to ask town council?
Oh, Yeah. I was going to just fix that.
That's what I meant. That's totally what I meant. So that's why we're in discussion.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Okay. Further discussion? No?
Do we need to give them a little more? A little more findings of fact or anything about why we need to change our mission?
You're free to do that.
We should probably do it at the council meeting, right?
Yeah.
Do we
have to go in the... Well, this is just to go there.
Right.
So we can help. We can help them with facts to actually make their motion to approve.
The motion to recommend that the town council adopt a modified version of the mission statement and proposed charge and a proposed charge discussed over a 4-month period by the committee is what your motion is.
Right.
That's it. That's all you need to do.
Okay.
Then you can talk about strategy on how to.
What do we have to give them for reasons? Do we have to make an argument about why this is important?
I think the town council put this together. They had some great ideas initially, very heavily focused on energy with very specific things called out. And the working of our group has evolved to the three primary areas. So I think it's just putting it out there how the, you know, this is how this committee sees it. Do you agree? And here are some of the things we've been working on.
Right.
And what are some of the... I still think it's a good time to also get input from them. We can say, here's some of the things that we have planned. Are there other things that are top of your priority list as it comes to sustainability? More like a conversation. I don't know many of these town council meetings.
So I think there are two ways you could approach asking the town council to do anything. One is with sort of a memo that explains the rationale, a letter that explains this is why we want you to do this thing. The other is to present them with the thing you want them to do and describe it, explain it in person.
Okay.
So we should write a letter asking to present it at the meeting, right? Asking it on the agenda.
I think that if you make this motion, if you pass this motion, then it will be transmitted to them and you've got the opportunity to come do it in person.
Yeah.
If you want to do a letter, then we just have to figure out what your letter says as well.
Okay.
It's up to you.
That could take us a few months to
apply.
So,
I just want to make sure we get on the agenda. So
this would get you on the agenda.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
All in favor?
Aye.
Did you have a second?
I seconded.
Okay.
Well, we've passed.
Yes.
Cool, man.
Woo!
Great.
Imagine what we can do in the next 2 years.
We only have one more year left.
Oh, we do?
Whoa.
No, we're a standing committee.
Yeah, but we only have 3 years.
So says us.
So we have to, apply again, I guess.
We can become like Congress and give ourselves indefinite
health insurance.
And a budget.
Cheese.
Go on. All right, what's next? Yeah, 4 minutes.
That's it.
Well, do we want... talk about the council meeting that we're going to go to?
And
I have two things for the item on there that's new agenda items I wanted to just talk about maybe for next time we talk in more detail. So I don't want to skip that one, if that's possible.
Okay.
Two quick little things.
Go ahead.
So one, I've been thinking about this a lot lately, how we're kind of, nobody wants renewable energy out in the woods. Everyone wants it. Like our ordinance says that it's going in commercial zones. But we're at this weird intersection right now where retail is kind of dying this slow, awkward death, but all the land in commercial or retail zones, it still has a high value. Owners think there's an opportunity cost associated with it. They want to get their investment back. The reason renewable energy goes out into green spaces is because it's cheap and there's not alternatives out there. The problem is, one of the things I've been thinking about is that the commercial space is also, not only is it viewed as being worth more, it's also taxed much differently than open space as well. So I would like to talk about in more detail at our next meeting, I think a good way to encourage renewable energy to go into the built environment is to do some sort of property tax adjustment, where tangible taxes are all the same in the states, $5,000 a megawatt, but as a way to encourage renewable energy to go in the built environment to give some sort of break on the underlying property taxes to those commercial, industrial, retail owners. And I think that's a necessary carrot. The other thing I was thinking...
Would that require a CBIC?
No.
Because you're not fucking just solar, you're fucking all...
It would be all renewable energy. Solar is the one that with the major land other thing, though, that I think is coming, and the first application I know of in the state is in West Kingston, is for commercial scale storage. There's currently no clear method right now to tax storage. Once the first one goes in, it's going to blow up. And what happened, which is a good thing, our grid desperately needs it, but what happened with renewable energy, wind and solar in Rhode Island, is that it took 5 or 6 years for the state to go, oh, maybe we should figure out a clear path to tax it so people know what they can charge and know what to expect. I think that it would be smart of South Kingstown to consider some sort of tangible taxes, an ordinance or otherwise, to start on this first system. So I think it's going to happen, especially because this is where offshore wind, we have a lot of transmission in the area, offshore wind is coming in this area. I think it would, one, encourage the town to look at these applications more seriously, but it would also increase revenue, and we wouldn't miss out on 5 or 6 years until they figure it out. Those are my two things.
I have one thing.
For next time.
And that would be, can we work more on towards what your information you had about the savings in buildings, and maybe be able to make proposals to the town as you have to work on that. So whatever information you can get us in regards to that, because it seems like a no-brainer to me.
Yes.
I mean, and whatever we would need to move this forward to support you.
Supporting you, baby.
Well, this past week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, we had a company in Air Source Solutions. North Carolina National Grid brought them in to do, I think, four communities. Rhode Island being one, South Kingstown being the only one in Rhode Island. The rest were in Massachusetts. And they did building envelope assessments, air movement, warm air escaping, and so forth. So they're putting together a proposal, much like they did with this one here for the energy use, that we can go to the infrastructure bank and say, look, this is what it's going to cost, this is what it's going to save us. And put the two together instead of just trying to. Because right now, if we went to the infrastructure bank and John put together this project for the wastewater treatment plant and the public services building, which is great. He's going on bill repayment with that. But it sucked all the savings right out of this package. Really, we were looking to do some major savings with the infrastructure bank, but now those two projects are gone. So maybe we'll pick it up some with the building envelopes. We won't get that back for more weeks anyway. We just finished it. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
It didn't make the agenda, but I do at some point here want to talk about this kind of composting.
We heard
loud and clear from our residents that they're interested in that. I forwarded that. Did Jay forward that? My request to the chairwoman. I'm supposed to go through Jay. The chairwoman, maybe. About the consultant that met at the composting conference.
It sounds familiar.
He forwarded that up.
It might have come to me.
But maybe we at some point get him in, but. Or somebody like him that talk about the community composting.
See that? Yeah, this is definitely. We have. I feel like all of a sudden we have all of these balls in the air.
Yeah.
So
date
increased membership may help.
Maybe.
After the summer's over, we may even. Then you have to consider meeting more often if you want to move ahead on some of these things.
Yeah, I'd be interested.
Yeah, because I don't think once a month can.
Slow.
Can we just select the date? I don't know when the town council meets next.
The 13th of August. I mean, we could possibly get you on the agenda for the 22nd of July, but I'm really thinking.
Next Monday.
Yeah.
Let's plan for August 13th, then?
I think that makes sense.
So, Johnny, will you be there? Were you around on the 13th?
I cannot do that.
So the 22nd looks better.
Huh? The what?
Next Monday.
July.
The only thing is, I would need someone to grab the theme. Well, first of all, Angela, you're the chair. I'm not going to throw you under the bus, but do you? I mean, we can do this as a team, or however you want to do it. I mean, I want to just keep it tight, right?
Only one meeting in August, so it's September after that.
No, I'm just, all I'm doing is looking at the calendar. So August 13th at what time?
7 o'clock.
I should be able to do that. So can you do that as well? Can we do this together?
August 13th, it's a Tuesday.
Yes.
So Tuesday.
At 7? I can do that. Is that okay with everybody else if Tony and I go?
If you want, okay.
I'll just go.
What's the protocol? Should the whole team come if, or whoever?
It's really up to you. It really is. It's up to you.
It's appropriate, right? Aren't you chair and vice chair?
Yeah. I'm happy for whoever wants to do it. The one thing that I really need help on, because I'm like running into other deadlines, is someone to take a look at the PowerPoint and pull in some of the themes for as it relates to energy, waste, and water, or just so that we have that. It's like slide. It's like some of this stuff I can update after with what we just came up with. I just was copying down stuff that was being said at the same time.
Do you want that for Monday?
I just need it before the 13th. I'm gonna be out from Wednesday night through the following Thursday. So as long as when I come back, someone would like it's a week or so from now.
I'm not really good at making things look nice in PowerPoint, but I can work on the content.
That's all I want is someone has to go back to the forums from the output documents from the forums to just pull out the key themes. Like we know the waste one had the plastic bag reduction ordinance, the recycling and composting, incentivizing, so those were, I don't remember some of the big themes from the first energy. And I know Doug, back in the day, had like output documents. So it's just capturing some of the themes from what we've heard from others as well as our own. So it's just the data, instead of providing data, it's just saying, hey, here's what we've heard from the community, here's what we've talked about, here's what's a priority, these are the three areas, based on that, we'd like to make these recommended changes, and that's the document, and to the structure of the planning board.
Well, I haven't been reviewed yet, so I can definitely go in there and make changes.
Cool.
Okay, as long as we can go over things before the 13th, I'm happy.
Yep.
Cool. Do we have to write to the town council? Or will
no, you don't.
You're in charge. Okay, cool. I feel good. Anything else? Correspondence?
Just a great meeting.
Wait, next meeting date.
Does the 26th work for people?
I can do that.
I vote for the 26th.
I can do it.
Monday, last
day. Is that work for you?
The 26th of July.
August.
Okay.
Well, right now we just have monthly meetings, unless we're supposed to have more.
When
that's good.
Was it supposed to be the 19th?
It was supposed to be the 19th.
Okay, I'll just edit it. And we're doing 6 p.m. forever now. So.
Good.
Okay, 26th,
68. My son gets married that week.
Ooh.
Nice.
Nothing else? You good? Okay. Meeting adjourned. It is 8:06.
Nice.
No motion? Just
motion to what?
You're gonna adjourn it. That's
I've
it.
Never had to be motion to adjourn
that.
It.
We were told
okay.
That's what we do.
I'm
that's
learning
how we
as I go.
That's all right.
Roll.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Good.
I think they came up on somebody.
On high.